We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Now let me see which. I'll be telling another story here from the book. I'll give you the option of, because we may not get to all of them. So which one would you like to do? Who put Bella in the witch elm, or Gunter stole the Yahgsee case?
Let's do Yahgsee, because that's a pretty weird one too.
Okay.
Now the strange thing about this case is that no one is entirely sure, because there's not a huge amount of sourcing on this. So some people have said that maybe it's a hoax, but I'm not real sure. It supposedly happened in 1984. So there's this guy, and his name's Gunter Stoll, and he had been a food engineer, and he lived in Antshausen, Germany. Now, he lost his job, and he kind of started to go a little loopy after that. I guess he started getting, like, paranoid. And he started, mm-hmm. like, telling his wife that there was they're out to get me. You know, they're going to hurt me, they're going to kill me, but he wouldn't tell her why. So the wife was kind of like, okay, bro, whatever. She just, like, was thinking he was just kind of losing his mind. But then October 25th, 1984, they're sitting at home. Gunter... it's about 11 o'clock. He suddenly jumps up out of his chair and says, "Now I've got it." And then he writes down on a piece of paper the letters Y-O-G apostrophe T-Z-E. Now, some people have said that maybe it's Y-O-6 T-Z-E, but it doesn't really matter because nobody knows what it means.
Yeah.
So he writes it down. And then, like, as soon as he writes it down, he scratches it out. And then a little bit later, he leaves the house and he goes to a bar that was near his house. He sits on a stool. He orders a beer, but apparently he didn't even drink any of the beer. But then he fell off the stool and, like, busted his face up on the floor. It, like, knocked him out for a couple of minutes. So they kind of wake him up or whatever. He leaves the bar. He gets back into his car, which was a Volkswagen Golf. Now, nobody knows where he was for the next couple of hours. The next place he turns up is this place called, and I'm sure I'm butchering this name because I'm not German, but it's called Heiger Seelbach, I guess. He had grown up there. So he turns up in this town, and it's like 1 or 2 in the morning at this point. So 1 o'clock in the morning, he shows up on the doorstep of this woman that he had known, like, a long time ago. She had, like, been his babysitter or a tutor or something like that. I can't really remember. So he's knocking on the door. It's 1 in the morning. She's like, no, you can't come in. It's 1 in the morning. Why don't you go to your parents' house? Because I guess I don't know if his parents still lived in this town. So he tells her something really horrible is going to happen. That's all he said. And then he took off. So then another 2 hours go by. And nobody knows where he was. Then 3 o'clock in the morning, there's these two truck drivers, and both of them independently called the police and reported that they saw a wrecked VW Golf in a ditch on the side of the Autobahn. So one of the truckers runs to the emergency phone, and the other trucker, like, goes up to the car to see if he can help the driver. So Gunter Stoll is in the car. He's clearly pretty messed up. He's, like, kind of banged up. He was also completely naked. So the guy asked him, the guy's like, so what's going on? What happened? So Gunter says, there were 4 other guys in the car with me, but they're not my friends. And he wouldn't say who they were. So the police show up, they put him in an ambulance, but he died on the way to the hospital. Now, when they do, like, the autopsy or, you know, the postmortem or whatever, they find out that the accident, like, the way that his car was wrecked, they're like, he didn't get those injuries from that accident. They think that he was actually run over by a different car, like,
holy
while
shit.
He was naked, and then somebody put him back in his own car. So they asked the truck drivers, who were the first people on the scene, they're like, okay, well, did you see anything weird? And they said, well, I saw this one guy who had like a white jacket on, and he was kind of near the car. But, you know, by the time we got up there, he had already run away. And then the other trucker said, I saw this dude like hitchhiking on an off ramp, but that was, you know, they never found either one of those guys.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is that they don't know if like the note that he wrote, like the Yogsi thing, they don't know if that had anything to do with how he died, or like if somebody was actually like, look, they don't know if it was like a, you know, maybe it was a license plate number, or some people said maybe it was like, maybe it was like a radio station call sign, or some people have said, oh, maybe it had something to do with like his job, like because he was like a food like engineer guy, maybe that was like some kind of chemical, you know, whatever.
Right.
They're like, well, maybe he was involved in some kind of industrial espionage. Maybe he was like, got in with a drug dealer. They don't really know, because he had been like really paranoid about somebody trying to kill him. And he did seem to know that something bad was going to happen because he told that woman in the town, but then he was just like out driving around like randomly. And then apparently someone took all his clothes and put him in the road and then ran him over and then put him back in his car.
Very weird.
Although some people have said maybe he didn't, maybe he just had like a psychotic break and he took off all his clothes and then just ran out on the Autobahn. Somebody hit him with their car and then they were like, well, shit, I don't want to get in trouble. So they just like put him in his own car and just like, yeah, I'm out of here. Bye. You know, it's like, so that might've happened too. It might've just been, he might've just freaked out. And it might not have been like people stalking him or whatever, but, so it's weird because the only source of this was like, there was a German crime show that came out in 1985 that talked about this on there. And then there was like an article in a German newspaper about it. But like I said, I found it, but it was all in German and I had to like translate it to like, to get all the details.
Yeah.
But, that's kind of like the only source for it. So some people said, oh, maybe it's just like an urban legend. Like maybe it didn't really happen, but I'm not really sure. So it's like, well, I thought I'd put it in the book anyway, because it's like a really weird case and it comes up on a bunch of lists and stuff. And I thought it would be a good thing to talk about.
Yeah, it's a cool story. It's a cool story. Yeah, it's weird. It really makes you think, that one. Have you ever, I stumbled upon this guy, I don't know his name off the top of my head, I'll have to look him up eventually. I was going to have him on the show, but I never got around to it. But have you, with regards to the Zodiac Killer, have you ever heard the theory that there was no Zodiac Killer, that it was all a fabrication of, you know, the guy from the newspaper and his buddy on the police force, that it was all kind of like a creation, you know, for sensationalism, and not necessarily that there was actually a serial killer, you know, named the Zodiac, because all the murders are very different from each other, at least the cab driver murder and the, you know, the Lover's Lane murder, and even, you know, and then there's even the one where he's running around in the costume. It's like, none of these really kind of fit together. They're all kind of weird. Seem like they're all different crimes. It's like, the theory is that, you know, the newspaper guy created the whole thing as part, you know, to gin up, you know, sensationalize things, get people excited to sell newspapers. Have you heard that theory before?
I had heard that theory. I don't know a great deal about it, but yeah, we did a show.
Yeah, that's about all I know.
Too, and I was, I was just kind of like, now when we did a show about it, it does seem like the kind of, you know, there were three or four of the canonical murders that did seem similar, but yeah, the cab driver one seemed, I'm not saying it wasn't the same guy that did it, but it did seem different. Like, you know, it happened like on a crowded street. He just kind of like did it randomly, and it didn't seem like the same, you know, the same modus operandi. It didn't seem like the same guy, but you know, I don't know. It might be, it's just, I don't know if a newspaper guy would be that, would really go to those lengths, like stuff, like to link together murders. Maybe they would. I mean, you know, sometimes people, like every now and then someone's depravity or whatever will surprise me, but I do feel like in general, most people wouldn't do that type of thing, but
yeah, it's a pretty audacious thing to do.
It is. It is.
And if you, get caught, you're like pretty fucked. Like, if you're not in legal trouble, like you're a pariah for doing it.
It seems like it wouldn't be worth it. Like, the reward for it would be like, oh, you know, we sold like a whole bunch of papers, I got a raise. Is like, but you know, if you get found out, you know, your career's over, your life's over. It's like everyone's just gonna shun you. It seems like it wouldn't be worth it. But I don't know. I mean, people have done dumb things that really didn't seem worth it to me before. So it's possible, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, possible, but implausible.
There you go. Now, this may be rendered moot by all these it's funny because everyone's like worried about privacy, but then all these people are doing these DNA things. So it's like eventually it'll probably be to the point where this would not be moot. But I came up with an idea that I think they should do, but other people have said, oh, I don't know, I think that's an invasion of privacy somehow, which I don't agree with. But here's my proposal, if I could ever get in front of someone who could make this happen. I don't know who. The president. They should make a law, right? When you die, they take your DNA and put it in a giant database for the purpose of solving cold cases. I feel like that's only fair. I feel like that's fair. It's like you're dead. You don't have any rights. It's not an invasion of privacy. You're already dead. So we're going to just take your DNA in the event that you were some kind of crazy serial killer or a serial rapist or even a one-time criminal. That way we can clear the books on that crime. I feel like that's fair. I feel like that should be the law. But I don't know. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I actually like that idea. I mean, I don't really have a problem. I mean, because I think most places now will take DNA from, you know, people who get arrested or who get convicted of certain crimes.
California, that's like the law.
Right,
for sure.
I'm pretty sure that that's the law most places now. And like you said, I mean, once the person is dead, it's like they don't really have any claim. They don't have any right anymore. I guess, you know, their family could argue about that because it's like, oh, it's kind of our DNA too, but whatever. I do feel like that would probably help solve a lot of crimes because, like, you know, even if the guy's dead, at least you can say, oh, well, he's dead, but he did this and that and the other thing. Or maybe he was related to somebody that did one.
Exactly.
You know, just like they did with, right. I don't really have an issue with that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't really have any particular, I mean, you know, as far as privacy goes, yeah, I don't want people going through my stuff. I don't want people going through my social media and stuff like that. But I'm not really bothered by people like giving my DNA. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people are really weird about it. So yeah. But
yeah.
Like I said, I think that's just kind of fair. It's as fucked up as it sounds. It was like, all right, well done. You know, sicko, you managed to, you killed like 40 people. We never caught you. You're dead. Let's just, you know, we get the guy's DNA and then it's solved. It's like, all right, well, this was the guy. There's no doubt about it. So I feel like that would go a long way to clearing some of these cases up. But, you know, do you think they'll ever solve the Zodiac case? Because with the Eurons thing, when that happened, that was what everyone was like, oh, shit, now do Zodiac. And it's like, well, they don't necessarily have enough DNA, but maybe they do. And it's kind of like it's the kind of thing that I wouldn't have to be stunned if I turn on the news tomorrow and they, you know, they're carting some old dude out and they're like, yeah, we found the Zodiac. Same way as we got the Golden State Killer. But then there's also, it's like time keeps moving on, and it's like at some point these, you know, they're not going to arrest Jack the Ripper, right? So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that's ever going to get solved?
Zodiac. I'm optimistic about it. I mean, I thought that too. Like as soon as they caught Golden State Killer, I was kind of like, oh, maybe they'll get the Zodiac now because everybody wants to know who the Zodiac is, right? So, you know, although I suspect, I don't know, a lot of this year, I was actually surprised when they caught the Golden State Killer. I was shocked that he was still alive because we had said, like, on our show, they're like, he's dead. He's got to be dead. There's like, why did he stop killing people? But so I was like, so that was the one thing we got wrong. We thought he was dead. Or that he had, like, broken into somebody's house and they had shot his ass and then, like, just buried him in the yard. because they're just you know what I mean? Hey, this is the, you know, Vidalia Ransacker or whatever they called him, like, you know, because he had a bunch of different names. And they were just like, I'm just going to, like, cut him up and feed him to my dogs. And, like, you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So that's what we thought. We thought that he had been committing a crime and he had died, and that's why he – but that's interesting is that – I don't know, like – I feel like they probably will catch the Zodiac. I was thinking about serial killers that stop. I was actually thinking about BTK because he stopped for a real long time too. And I've actually read a book that is all his confessions, like all the letters that he wrote to Catherine Ramsland, I think is.
He's a really chatty guy. He's like, he's probably one of the creepiest of them all because he won't shut up. He like talks. he loves talking about murdering people.
Yep. And his being inside his head is just so strange. It's just he has these bizarre. Just the way that he talks is bizarre. The way that he thinks is bizarre. Like, he thinks he's, like, on spy missions and stuff. It's like he has – everything has code names and acronyms and – I don't know. He just goes on these little missions and it's – he just – like, the weird, like, fantasies that he has, they're just, like, so, so strange. But it's like if somebody like that could stop, then I guess other serial killers could stop too. Because for a long time I was like, well – if, you know, if a serial killer killed, you know, a dozen people, 20 people, whatever, and they never caught him, and they haven't caught him by now, I said, oh, he probably died. That's why he stopped. But maybe not necessarily, because BTK wasn't dead, and he killed a bunch of people, and then he just stopped.
Right,
because he got too busy. He had a family and kids and stuff.
And yeah, that's the theory with Golden State Killer and also some of these guys in general, where it's like they get older – they have kids, you know, they get into their 40s and their testosterone level drops down and they're just not physically fit enough to be running around murdering people. And so at some point they have to, like, it's as fucked up as it sounds, like an athlete, you know, they hit that age where they're like, I can't do this anymore. I have all these injuries from murdering people and shit. And, you know, a couple of them almost got away and I just don't have it anymore, ma'am. I just can't be the BTK anymore. So,
I mean, I guess it does happen. Like, when dudes get older, they're just kind of like, they don't have the same, because I think a lot of serial killing is motivated by, like, weird sexual proclivities. And I feel as that mellows out as you get older, you just don't feel the same, you know, drive to do that anymore. So maybe that's what it is. Because I definitely think, I mean, BTK said that it was just because, you know, he had kids and he was busy. And, you know, when he was occupied, like with his family and stuff, he wasn't really thinking about it. He only really thought about it, like, when he went out on business trips and when he was away from home, when he was away from, like, the stabilizing influence, I guess, of, like, his family. I couldn't imagine being... I mean, that dude's poor kids, man.
Well,
I can't imagine how
his daughter, have you read the book?
She did.
I haven't read it, but I saw a few
interviews with her, and I'm like, I can't imagine. God,
yeah, it's
like,
pretty wild.
That'd be a serial killer. That must be messed up. And she didn't know, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing I've seen sort of throws back in a sense to what we were talking about, like when these things get solved. It's like, I didn't necessarily see it with BTK, but I'm sure if there was internet was as prevalent as it is now, this would have been the case. But like with the Golden State Killer, it was like everybody, so many people still to this day, even though his wife said that he said he was doing all this stuff, he was out hunting, he was going on a hunting trip, he was going to see his parents, that's when he was doing this, she had no idea. There are people who still like insist that, oh, she had to know, she had to have known that this guy was out committing all these crimes. He did so many crimes. It's like, how could she not have possibly ever put two and two together that this guy was, you know, the Golden State Killer or the East Area Rapist? Like, how could she not have known? So it's a very interesting, these poor people forever fall under this cloud of suspicion, whether they deserve it or not. You know, it's an unfortunate turn of events.
It really is. And the thing about it is that depending on what your relationship is like, I'm like, you know, when I was growing up, if, you know, if my dad was a serial killer, he's not, I don't think, but if my dad was a serial killer, I wouldn't have known. I mean, especially when you're a kid or even if it's your wife, it's like, you know, he goes off to work every day. You say, you know, he's at work,
right.
You know, and, you know, on the weekends, he's like, oh, I'm going out hunting with the buddies or whatever. You're like, okay. You don't think twice about it. You don't think, oh, maybe he's a serial killer. I mean, unless
right.
he comes home covered with blood or something like that, it's like that wouldn't, you know, you love
yeah.
that person. You married that person. That's not the first thing that you would jump to. You know what I mean? It just, you know, even like Ted Bundy's girlfriend, she was the one that kind of, she didn't turn him in exactly, but she was kind of the one that, you know, alerted the police. And that always kind of blew my mind too, because it's like you would think that you wouldn't, I mean, if that's your boyfriend, you wouldn't really think that he was a serial killer. So it's like
yeah.
going so far as to like call the police and say, hey, I think my boyfriend might be a serial killer. You know what I mean? It's like, that's got to be, that's really ballsy. I mean, to do that, because I think most people would just like, you know, no, no, it can't be. You'd try to talk yourself out of it because, you know that person. That person can't be a serial killer. But, you know, serial killers know people too. So
exactly, yeah.
Some people do know serial killers, and it's like whether you know it's a serial killer or not.
Yeah, it's wild like that. Yeah,
that's a nice thought. That's a nice thought, isn't it? Good night, everybody. Sleep well. Sleep well.
Now, Jim Vujovic in the chat, he says in response to the YOG apostrophe TZE, he says or he theorizes, let's say. Because I don't know necessarily if he's fluent in German or whatever, but he says it's a contraction for the German Joglutz, meaning I'm smoldering or I'm gagging, I'm yawning, or I'm protecting. So that's his theory, that the Y-O-G apostrophe T-Z-E is a German for Joglutz, a contraction. I don't know. Yeah.
I never heard that theory before. That's very. I wonder if that's true. That's very interesting.
He also,
so he just wrote that
give,
on a piece of paper, and then he's like, ah, forget it.
yeah, I don't know what that, yeah. And the other thing he said was he also theorized with regards to the horror of room 1046. He theorizes that when he said, Don, I just ate, he was speaking in code. So.
Yeah, I kind of suspect that as well. I mean, because I don't know if this Don person, like, was the one that killed him. In fact, it probably was. But I do think there was a bunch of code talking going on, for
right.
sure.
Right, yeah, it seems that way.
Because I think there was, like, illegal activity. I don't know what kind of illegal activity, but he was involved in some illegal activity. So, yeah, I think that's definitely the case.
Now, another famous case... That I don't really even need to pontificate much about it because I want to find out your thoughts. What do you think of the JonBenet Ramsey case? That's probably that's one of the handful. We don't get as it seems like nowadays with the technology and everything, we don't get as many long-standing unsolved mysteries. Oftentimes people screw up and they get caught right away. There's just so many ways to get caught now. It's crazy. That one came a little bit before some of the stuff, but there's still DNA and everything. So I guess what's your take on that case? Because it's always fascinated me. Because there's just so many weird elements to it that's like you have one theory, but there's like one or two parts of it that don't make sense with the theory. But I think what's interesting before I turn it over to you, because I'm a crazy ass true crime follower, but it's like oftentimes in these cases. The things that don't, like, make any sense are just, like, things that kind of happen by happenstance you couldn't necessarily explain, right? You know what I mean? It's just like, well, that's just the way the lamp fell when the thing happened. It wasn't intentionally placed there or whatever. So,
That's weird. Yeah. That's something that we've talked about before because I was, I think it was when we were on the show talking about the horror in room 1046. But it's, like, a lot of details that look weird in hindsight, like at the scene, were actually, if you had been there and seen the crime happen, it wouldn't have been weird. It didn't really have anything to do with, you know, it just looked strange because somebody got murdered. So it's like it seemed like everything was significant.
Exactly.
Some of the stuff might not have been. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I do feel like there's an element of that. So it's like you never – because you always kind of have to err on the side of, well, this might be a clue. You know what I mean? So it's like everything
exactly.
has to be a clue until they can determine that it's not a clue. Yeah, it's like I don't know – I'm very, like, ambivalent about the JonBenet case in the sense that it seems like it almost seems to me equally plausible that just a stranger, like a random person did it or that the parents did it. Although it did seem like, I mean, they did DNA in, what, 2008, something like that, and they said that that exonerated the family.
Right.
I know some people think that maybe the son did it. And the parents were, like, covering up for him. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. I mean, it's implausible for, like, just a stranger to bust into a house and kill somebody and, like, put him in the basement or whatever. But
yeah.
It's not impossible. And I have written about some cases where that exact thing happened, where some dude just, like, climbed in the window and just took somebody, like, out of their bed when there was, like, somebody next to him in the bed. You know what I mean? And they
yeah,
didn't even wake up. So it does happen. It's just, it's unusual, but I don't know. It's weird because it has a lot of similarities to the Madeleine McCann case, where I feel like the parents kind of got raked over the coals in that one too. And I'm pretty sure they didn't have anything to do with it. You know, other than maybe being like leaving the kid alone when maybe they shouldn't have, but even that, I don't know. Like I said, I didn't really follow the JonBenet case a lot. Like I did when it first came out, but like, I didn't really follow any subsequent, things about it. So I'm not really sure where I stand on it. I hate to like always, cause I feel like the parents in those cases always kind of get the shit end of the stick because people are always going to think, you know,
right,
that the
yeah.
parents had something to do with it. Because you know what I mean? It's like whenever somebody gets murdered, they're always like, oh, you know, it's somebody that knows you, because most of the time it is. But, and when, you know, when children get murdered, a lot of times it's somebody that knows them, not necessarily a parent, but it's, you know, sometimes
right,
somebody
right,
in
yeah.
their family or somebody that knows them. So it's like, I can see why that's, you know, why people do that. But in another way, I do feel like it's kind of shitting on them too, because it's like, you know, if they didn't do it, then everyone's been treating them like crap, and it's like
they lost
the daughter, so it's like another thing that's piled on top of them. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they necessarily had anything to do with it. I don't know if they had any reason to. Maybe it was an accident, and they tried to, you know, make it look like a murder. But that's kind of all. I don't know if anybody actually like meant to kill her. If it was them. You
the
know,
wildest.
I mean, obviously. What's that?
I was going to say, the wildest part of that story, I don't know if you remember this, you probably do because it was like a sensational moment, was when, like, that crazy-ass fucking guy in Thailand was like, yeah, I did it. And they're like, what the fuck? This is, like, had to be, like, within the last 10 years. You remember this? And they like.
I don't, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be on the JonBenet Ramsey, like, Wikipedia. But some dude in Thailand was like, yeah, I did it. And I guess he had been in the area at the time. So there was enough there that they were like, that they fucking, like, shackled his ass and threw him on a plane and brought him back to Colorado. And it was like, this is it. They got him. And then it turned out he was just crazy. And there's no way he could have done it. I think he still insists that he knows that that it was a two-man job or something crazy like that. But like somehow they were like, no, he's crazy. But it was like headline news sometime within the last 10 years or so that it was like, what the fuck? It was kind of very very Golden State Killer-esque, where it was like, what the hell? They this came out of left field. Where'd this guy come from?
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now. John Mark Carr, 2006. The reason they knew was because he said that he had drugged her, and they hadn't found any drugs in her body. And also they had his DNA and it didn't match the DNA. So they figured he was just like a nutcase. That's another weird thing to me. I don't understand these people that just, like, confess. But it happens, like, all the time. I mean, that's why they don't give all the details to the press, like, ever, because every single case, especially cases that are really, really, like, high profile like that, you're always going to get, like, a huge, like, an alarming number of people, like, coming forward saying they did it. I can't imagine needing attention that bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Confessing to, like, a horrible murder that you didn't do.
There's some killer, they tried to, like, link him to the Making a Murderer murder. That's a word salad, but, yeah, they tried to link him to that, to the Teresa Halbach murder, but there's like, a serial killer. You probably know this guy. Like, he's confessed to, like, a shitload of crimes, and I think kind of the opposite
Henry
of my DNA thing. What's that?
Henry Lee Lucas?
Yeah, yeah, it's got to be. Yeah. That's another weird one where it's, like, in some instances you feel like that they just want to, they just take his word for it on some of these because they just want to close the case where it's like, there's no way that guy really killed all these people. So it's a very weird, that's a whole other weird thing.
Yeah, they did. Actually, I just saw a documentary about Henry Lee Lucas the other day. They think that he probably killed 2 or 3 people, but he's confessed to, geez, I can't even remember now. It's a couple hundred, maybe more than that. Pretty much any case that happened, like, in this time period, like, in a particular time period in a particular large swath of the country, he's like, oh, yeah, I did that. And, like,
you said,
a lot of times it's messed up because a lot of times they'll be like, oh, you did it? Okay. We're just closing the books on that one. Even though they found out later, like, he wasn't even in the state at the time or, you know, they're like, he was provably, some like, working somewhere else, like, you know, hundreds of miles away. Like, when that happened and he couldn't have done it. He's just addicted to, I mean, he did kill people, but not nearly as many as he
said
he did.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It might have been,
was
it 600? I want to say it was 600 people that he confessed to
killing.
Yeah, it was
some astronomical number where it's
number. Where it's like, and I think somebody actually did the math and, like, over the time period. It's like, could they even have done that? Like, is it logistically possible for them to have, you know, traveled around the country and done this, that, and the other thing? And they're like, no, it's not possible. It's not possible that one person did that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting character.
He is, yeah.
All right, let's do another story here. Who put Bella in the witch elm?
Okay. Yeah, this is a good one. This happened in 1943. So this is right around Birmingham, England. So there's 4 kids, and this was spring, and they decided they were going to go out to this place called Hagley Wood, and they were looking around for, I think they were looking for birds' nests or birds' eggs or something like that. So they're going around looking, and one of the kids climbs up this witch hazel tree. And he looks, like, down into the hollow, and he sees something white down in there. And he's like, huh, I wonder what that is. So he reaches down, and he pulls it out. Now, at first, he thinks it's an animal skull, but when he gets it all the way pulled out, he sees that it is a human skull. So at this point, they were kind of like, well, we're not really supposed to be on this property because it belonged to some, like, landed gentry or something. So he's like, we're kind of poaching. So let's just stuff this back in the tree, and then we'll just go home and not talk about it anymore. So that's what they did. Now, later on that night, though, one of the kids actually was kind of like, he felt bad. So he actually told his dad, hey, we found a human skull in the tree. So they called the cops, and the cops go to the tree the next morning. So they actually found, it was when they got in there, it wasn't just the skull, it was pretty much the whole skeleton. So this woman had been killed and stuffed into the hollow of this tree. Now, the only thing they didn't find was one of her hands, which actually was found buried, like, outside, like, at the base of the tree, almost like somebody, I don't know what happened with that, but it looked like that had been buried separately. So they also found with the skeleton, they found one shoe, some clothes, they found a bottle, a wedding ring, and, like, this little scrap of fabric that they think had been stuffed into her mouth, like, to suffocate her. So they do some forensic examination of the body. They find out that she was between 35 and 40 years old. kind of a little woman. She's only about 5 feet tall. They thought she had at least one kid, as they could tell from the pelvis. She had dark brown hair and these really weird, like, crooked teeth. So they, and the way that the skeleton was, they said, okay, well, she must have been, like, stuffed into this tree, like, right after she was killed, because, you know, she was really stuffed in there. They wouldn't have been able to do it, like, if she had rigor mortis or whatever. Now,
yeah,
they're like,
okay,
she's probably been dead. Yeah, she's probably been dead about a year and a half. So they think that she was murdered in October of 1941 or roundabout. So because her teeth were so distinctive, like they were really crooked, they thought, oh, well, this would be easy, like, to identify her because her teeth are so weird. So they do, like, a bunch – they search all the dental records in the UK, but they don't find anything. So then they figure out, well, maybe she's not from around here. You know, there were no missing persons that, you know, matched that description from around that area. And some of the stuff that they found with her was not sold in the UK, so they thought maybe she was Dutch or maybe she was German. So basically, so it's 1943. I mean, it's during World War II in Europe. So, you know, there's a lot of people are busy doing other things. You know,
right,
there's a lot
right.
of bad shit going on. So it's like they don't really have, like, a huge amount of time, like, to investigate or find out who this is. Now, they did find out, though, that there was a guy that lived not too far from there. And he said that he thought he had heard a woman screaming from that wood. And this was back in July of 1941, which is, you know, close to the time where they thought she might have been. Now, he
yeah.
said that he reported it to the police at the time, but the police came out and they didn't find anything. So basically they're like, okay, well, nothing, like, the case goes nowhere for, like, 2 years. So then it's like the end of the year, 1944. It was, like, right before Christmas. Then this piece of graffiti turns up. There's on this wall, like, on a street in Birmingham. Somebody had written on the wall, "Who put Bella down the witch elm? Hagley Wood." So they see this and they're like, well, what does that, okay, that's really weird. And then, like, over the next couple weeks, like, similar kind of things start turning up, like, around the city and around the same area. Like, some of them said stuff like Hagley Wood Bella. Some of them said, like, one said, "Who put Lua Bella down the witch elm?" So
weird.
The cops are sitting there and go, yeah, so the cops are like, okay, well, is the same person writing this, or is this somebody that knows, like, who that woman is that was in the tree, or is it just some weird kind of, like, you know, meme thing? Like, somebody saw the one thing and they're like, now everybody's copying it. They don't really know.
Right.
So since all these, you know, messages started turning up, like, the case got kind of, like, you know, more interest was sparked about it. So the investigators kind of started working on it again, and, like, other people around the town kind of got interested in it. So they kind of start working on it. So then they have this woman who comes forward, and she says, you know, because they still don't know who this woman is, where she came from. So they're trying to figure out her identity. So they have this prostitute from Birmingham. She comes forward, and she said that she had known another prostitute named Bella, and she had worked along that that road and had disappeared sometime in 1941. They didn't really find anything else along that line. There was also a thing where Margaret Murray, who's kind of a famous anthropologist, she was very fascinated by the fact that the hand was found separate from the rest of the body, and they weren't quite sure why that was. So she came up with a theory that this was, like, a cult-style murder, and that this woman had been killed in order to make a hand of glory, which seemed a little far-fetched. But there was another weird murder. I think I wrote about it in my book, too, but it was a guy named, an old guy named Charles Walton. And he got killed, like, with a pitchfork, like, in a really ritualistic kind of way,
yeah.
like, in the 1940s. So it wasn't unprecedented. Like, it did seem like a weird pagan, you know, where, like, we're giving the blood to the earth, like, to grow the, you know, the crops or whatever.
Right, right.
So there was a little bit of that. So they said, well, that's kind of possible. I feel like the most plausible, you know, kind of line of inquiry into her identity was
yeah.
that she was probably They think she might have been a Dutch woman or a German woman, like I said. One of the theories was that she was a Dutch woman named Clarabella Dronkers, and that she was involved in a Nazi spy ring. And they think that maybe she was strangled by another Dutch spy whose name was Van Ralt. Now, they got this information from, like, the wife of a guy who saw it happen or who was involved in it happening. And apparently something went wrong with the mission or whatever, and they ended up – although he changed his story a couple times. Like, one of his stories, he's like, yeah, this Van Ralt guy strangled her and then stuffed her in the tree because whatever, they had a fight. But then in another version, he came forward and said, no, we didn't kill her. She was just really, really drunk, and we just stuffed her in the tree because reasons. Like, she was still alive. we thought that maybe she would, like, realize that she had hit rock bottom with the drinking, like, if she woke up, like, stuffed in a tree. That was one of the stories that he gave. I'm like, okay, that sounds plausible. But, yeah, so, but the spy thing did seem, like, pretty promising because they did know that there was this Nazi operative, and her
right.
code name was Clarabella. And she had parachuted into that part of England in 1941. And they had also executed another Nazi spy who had that same last name, Dronkers. It was a man. So, you know, they may have been related and they might have been, like, in on the same stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there was also they also caught this guy who was in the Gestapo, and his name was Joseph Jacobs. And before they executed him, they went through his stuff, like his possessions, and he had a photograph of his girlfriend who was a German cabaret singer named Clara Bowerly. And she actually lived in Birmingham and was thought to be like a Nazi spy. And again, they think that maybe she was killed because something went wrong with the mission and they just, you know, whatever. Now, the interesting thing about the Clara Bowerly theory is that apparently she was never, because like I said, she was not famous, but she was kind of well known. She was a singer and an actress and stuff. So like she kind of was, you know, known a little bit. Now wasn't really heard from again after 1941. But the thing about it is that, so, you know, it could have been her, but Clara Bowerly was fairly tall. And the woman they found in the tree, they thought was pretty short. They thought she was only 5 feet. So they're not entirely sure. So they're not, I mean, like I said, the spy thing to me seems the most reasonable, but there is the whole thing of like, why if these were spies, it seems like a very strange way to kill somebody and a very strange way to get rid of a body.
Right, right.
And especially like
plus,
it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
If you caught a spy, like even if you killed them, no one's going to really be mad at you. Right. So,
yeah, right. I just
so
feel like, I feel like if it was a spy and like another spy, like got mad at you or you like, you know, blew their cover or whatever. And you have
spy on spy. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
I think they're thinking that that's what it is, but it's like, I feel like if you were going to do that, I feel like you would do it like the mob would do it. You would just like shoot him and just like throw him in the ocean or something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like killing them and then going to all the trouble of stuffing them into a tree. I don't know. That just seems very strange to me. And it seems like this tree was kind of out in a forest. You know what I mean? So it seemed like, you know, why were they out there? What were they doing? You know, why would you go? I mean, it seems so much easier to just bury them. I mean, if you were out there and you killed them, why stuff them into a tree? It just seems too much work. But, so this graffiti, like, still shows up periodically. I think the last one, and it may have been updated by now, but the last one was in 2016. So people are still putting this graffiti, like, everywhere around Birmingham because this case has still never been solved. They still don't know who she is. Like I said, I do think the spy-on-spy thing is the most reasonable hypothesis. It seems to have the most evidence to support it. But it's possible she could have just, you know, been a sex worker and she ran into a serial killer and, who had a thing for stuffing people in trees. I mean, it's not the weirdest thing that I've heard of.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, having watched a lot of these shows, it never ceases to amaze me the lengths people will go to dispose of bodies in strange ways. So it's always like, how the fuck? Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
why
would
you just, like you
like,
said, why would you just throw them in a river? Why did you need to, like, do all this elaborate shit?
Yeah, I mean, that seems, like, ritualistic to me a little bit.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. It's a lot of work, yeah. So
yeah.
It's very strange. Now, have you looked at this New Bedford Highway Killer story that's kind of from around where I am? I'm in Massachusetts. It's down south of me. Have you? I don't know much about it. I guess there's a couple of books on it, but I haven't read it at all. Have you ever heard of this one?
I've heard of it, yeah. It's kind of it's on our topic list because a couple people have requested that we do it. I don't know a great deal about it either. I think it's kind of like, what is it's like nine women, something like that, that have kind of gone missing around the same area. But
yeah,
I don't know.
It sounds horrifying to say, but it's your standard highway killer. You know, it's your.
Yeah, like I said, it seems like there's a lot of those. A lot of those running around. I mean. I feel like I read something not too long ago that they were talking about of all the serial killers that have been caught, they did like a analysis of what the most common professions were that they had, and truck driver was up there. Not saying all truck drivers are serial killers. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that they're like, you know, there's in serial killers, their truck drivers are largely represented. You know what I mean? It's always stuff like that.
Well, this is, I'm sure, controversial thing to say, but it's true. So, I've seen a lot of criticism of the Golden State Killer case because there's a belief, and I agree with it in a sense, because there's other cases where this has happened, where it's like the perpetrator is a cop, and the cops never think to look at other cops. You know, it's that thin blue line. That's why I said this could be kind of controversial. But, I mean, it's just – that's human nature. Apparently, it's kind of the same thing in the medicine world where it's like doctors kind of cover for other doctors. It's the thin white line, they call it. So it's not some unheard of thing. But that's another part, a prevalent thing where it's like – I think that's where some of these guys get away with it for a while because they're cops and cops never think that maybe a cop could have done it.
Yeah, that really does seem to be – that is pretty common, isn't it? Because I feel like even a lot of serial killers that aren't cops are like cop groupies or
like
they want to be cops. Right. Or they wanted to be cops but they couldn't quite cut it or it's something like that. They always seem to have that – it's that one specific kind of serial killer personality type, which Golden State Killer was as well, where they like having control over people, I guess. And so they always kind of want to, they want to like tell other people what to do and, you know, things of that nature. So I guess that kind of work appeals to them in a lot of ways. It's weird because I think police officer was actually in that. It might have been top 5 or top 10. I can't remember.
I would bet
that list of most common. It's that was definitely in there.
Because it's not even just that cops don't investigate cops per se, but it's also like if you're going to be a criminal, what better cover than a cop? Because you know how not to get caught, and if you're really like close to the case, you know where they're looking and shit, what the evidence is, that kind of stuff. So it's like okay, I can throw them off their what they're thinking here, and by doing this, that, and the other thing. So one would think, but you know, it's human nature, I guess. They don't look at other cops.
And you can definitely get like more access to victims too, because especially if you're killing women or whatever, it's like, you know, you can pull a woman over in the middle of the night who's like alone in her car, and it's like most people are going to pull over because if you're a cop,
because
they're like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. So you have that going for you too. You kind of have, you know, whereas if you were just like a regular creepy looking dude, it's like people will be like, yeah, nope, I'm out of here. Like they're not going to stop for you. But if you're a cop, they will, you know.
Exactly.
So that's another thing.
Exactly.
Surprised it doesn't happen often, actually.
I bet it does. Now we're heading toward the end. One more case. I won't ask you to tell any more stories. I'm sorry I gave you so many now, but I think we got almost all.
Oh,
of them.
That's
okay.
We didn't do the
Frog Boys, but people should get all of the Faceless Villains books. But in Volume 3, you'll hear about the Frog Boys and the Inokashira Park dismemberment incident, which were two I had on my list, but we're running out of time here, so that'll entice people to go and pick it up. This is a new case. You probably don't know any more than I do about it, but, I mean, what do you think of this, the Delphi case? Because that's like, I mean, you know what's fucked up is, like, it's just this human nature. I don't know what it is. It's life. Like, it never ceases to provide new fucking creepy shit to creep you out. So it's like, for folks who don't know, this is a case that happened, I don't know the state, I'm not good at geography, but in a town called Delphi, I want to say Nebraska or Idaho. Maybe Jenny knows, but a couple of girls, teenage girls, were like walking along a bridge. They were being followed by a creepy guy. They filmed the creepy guy like on Snapchat, and then they were found murdered. And so like the police have released this like blurry, bad video of the creepy guy and like audio of the creepy guy being like, get down the hill. And it's like that's all they've given out. And people are like, give out all the other shit you have, but they're holding it back. Some people think, or some people don't. It's a very contentious new case. It happened a couple of years ago, but it's creepy as hell. So I mean, what do you? I presume you may have looked at this. So what do you think of the Delphi case?
Yeah, this is another one that a bunch of people have requested that we do. We haven't done it on the show yet, but I did remember
it.
Seeing.
Not, you know, it's hard to get info on it.
Yeah, it's like it happened in 2017, and yeah, I think it was Indiana. I think it was.
So
but yeah, it's like, yeah. So these two teenage girls, man, they're just like walking, and it was like the middle of the day, right? I mean, they're just like walking
like
down the trail in the middle of the day, like you do. And then this dude is just like falling behind them. They were what, 13 and
right.
And so the thing about it, if they have, I mean, how much of the video have they released? I see the picture. Like I've seen the picture of the dude. And
just,
you know, they've
like
released
that and that tiny audio clip. And they didn't release that until like halfway through the last 3 years, like a year and a half into it or something like that. So
and see, and they were recording for a lot longer than that, weren't they? Because they were just like, is this
that's
dude
the
following?
Theory. Yeah, that's like the theory that there's gotta be more material, but then no one knows. It's one of those that's really I'm not surprised you got a lot of requests for it, because it's one of those that's really jazzed up the citizen sleuth community, in a sense. Like, that's why it's got a lot of, I won't say excitement, interest around it, because it's just so weird and so puzzling that you see a whole bunch of people, you know, online trying to solve it, essentially, now that a lot of these other cases have been solved.
Yeah, and I think there's always something, too. There's always something particularly fascinating about cases that have these kind of creepy photographs that go along with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is the last picture that they took, or, you know, this is, you know, a picture and there's, like, a person squatting over in the bush. Is this the person that killed them and stuff like that? So I think that kind of helps a lot, too, that it has that visual component, because I'm always creeped out by cases like that, because I was like, holy crap, they took that picture and then, like, a few minutes later they were dead. You know what I mean? That, like, really weirds me out. So I think that might be why. I mean, I'm looking at the sketch of the dude. It's really weird because the sketch of the dude doesn't really look like the picture of the dude. Like, the dude in the picture looks older than the dude in the sketch. Like, the dude in the sketch looks like he's, like, 20. But the dude in the picture looks like he's maybe 40. But it said in the description that it's, like, that he was kind of youthful looking, maybe, that it's like he maybe could have been anywhere from 18 to 40 years old. They weren't really sure how old he
was. Like a baby face.
So, yeah, like, because he seems to have like a little round kind of face.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is just like, this is super creepy. They're also not releasing how they were killed, did they? I feel like they just said they were
murdered.
No, but
there's like all kinds of rumors about like, it's a crazy story. I've dug a little bit into it, like I said, because the citizen sleuth community is so into it. And we're heading – the lady's going to cut us off in a minute, but we're still We're still going to record, so just if you bear with me, give me like 5-10 more minutes, and I'll get you on your way, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, there's like leaked text messages from someone who allegedly stumbled upon the bodies, the person who found the bodies, and said that they were like ritualistically murdered. But the provenance of these texts and the veracity of them is in question. Some people swear that they're accurate. Other places it's so in question. I think like on one of the Reddit groups, like you're not allowed to post that you can only allude to the texts because they can't, it's not a sure thing. So that's one of the weirder aspects of the case. But there's very, very little information out there. So it's a hard nut to crack. And when you're looking at these groups, I kind of check in every few months or something like that. Because if you go like every day, they're just pondering over like the same details endlessly over and over and over again, where it's like, was he wearing a hat or a hood? And they like,
yeah.
Like, oh, Jesus, not the hat and hood debate again.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and yeah, there's really not a lot on there about it. They have like a few suspects listed, and then that's about it. And they're just kind of talking about the controversy about how they haven't released much of the information and how people are kind of... I know that they have to like keep some information back, like I said, to weed out, false confessions and stuff. But
yeah.
I feel like on the other side of that is the more information you withhold, the more suspicious it looks that like, some stuff you don't want other people knowing about it. And it's like, might be some shenanigans. So you can't really win, I guess, by doing that.
yeah. Well, it's interesting. Something crossed my mind there before I lost my train of thought. But yeah, the Delphi, the people online looking at the over debating the stuff is, you don't have any information, and they start again. It's kind of like what we talked about before, where it's like stuff takes on a significance that isn't necessarily a clue to the case, but when you have nothing else, you just kind of like keep digging into the same stuff like over and over and over again.
Yeah, because they're so interested in it, and I know that they're trying to help and stuff, but it's like you said, when nothing new is coming out, you just keep going back over the old stuff again and hoping to find something else. And like you said, you don't really know until the murder's solved. You don't know what's significant and what's not, so you just kind of have to act like everything is, I suppose. But yeah,
that seems to be the case.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be talking at the Strange Realities Conference, so I think you're on Friday night, same night I am. So probably in a couple of weeks from tonight. So what are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about two really weird murders that happened in 1974 in St. Augustine, Florida, which is only a few miles from where I grew up. These were two women who were basically hacked to death. The first one was hacked to death on her front porch with a machete. And the second one was her head was busted open with a concrete block. And there's a whole thing about this woman not being super popular in town. And like, maybe this guy is like a city councilor, maybe did it and all this other kind of stuff. So it's like, it's a really interesting case. And I wanted to cover that one because I've been to St. Augustine, numerous, numerous times, and it's a beautiful place, but, there's a lot of weird shit going on there. So yeah, that's what I'm going to be doing. Yeah. I'll be on Friday night at 10:40, I think is my time slot. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So you're right after me. So for the folks listening, the Banal America folks listening, Strange Reality Conference, 2 weeks from tonight, like at this very time, essentially, I'll be coming on first talking about the Flat Earth people of Flat Earth, and then Jenny's going to be talking about these unsolved murders. So that's your Friday night right there, folks. Yeah. So.
Yep, it's all sorted.
Yeah, strangerealitiesconference.com. And, of course, your website is jennyashford.com. The books are The Faceless Villain, a collection of the eeriest unsolved murders of the 20th century, volumes 1, 2, and 3. We really just scratched the surface here of these. There's so many cases in here, and I got to tell you, for sure, you're coming back on the show at some point, if you want to, because we could talk. This whole conversation flew by. I feel like we could easily talk again about all kinds of other stuff related to this true crime realm, if you will.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so many. I had to leave so many murders out because I was like, this book is going to be 4,000 pages long because I just kept finding new ones. And it's like, even now, like the three that I wrote, I keep going back and finding ones that I left out of those that I shouldn't have left out. And I was like, oh, man, crap. But it's, you know what I mean? You can't win. You got to stop somewhere. It's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, eventually maybe you just do the Faceless Villain deep cuts and you do that and run off the extra ones.
Yeah.
And, of course, the podcast is 13 o'clock. I've been looking for new podcasts to listen to. And so having talked to you about true crime for all this time, you mentioned all these episodes of your show. So now I'm going to get off the phone later tonight and start downloading episodes of 13 o'clock to check out these different programs on these different serial killers that you guys have talked about on there. And what other stuff do you talk about on 13 o'clock? It says paranormal weirdness. What kind of stuff have you talked about on there?
Oh, my gosh. We do – for a while we did a series on the show, A Haunting. So we do, like, poltergeist-type stuff, haunting-type stuff. We also do, like, historical-type stuff, like pretty much anything that's just weird. Like, we did a show a couple weeks ago about Howard Hughes. Because a bunch of people asked about that. Yeah, so we do, we did like weird Roman stuff, like old poisoners and stuff. We've mostly done true crime. I feel like we've gone more in a true crime direction the last few years. Before that, we did, you know, some UFO stuff. We did kind of like Edgar Casey. We did all that kind of stuff. But, we've slowly kind of gone more in the true crime direction because that's kind of my, you know, area of expertise, and that's what I like to talk about. But we still do historical stuff. We still do paranormal stuff, you know. And pretty much any weird case you can think of, we either have covered it or it's on our topic list to cover at some point in the future. So that's just
there you
what
go.
We
well,
do.
If you haven't covered this one yet, I'll give you a recommendation to put on the list because we've done these shows. We've done two or three covering this topic. Cruise ship crimes.
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
Yeah, they're plentiful. Look up Kendall Carver of the International Cruise Victims. I'm probably going to interview him at least some point in the next year. It's been a long time since I talked to him, but excuse me. His daughter died under mysterious circumstances. I think she vanished under mysterious circumstances off a cruise ship. Then he formed this organization, and since then, he's uncovered, like, just tons of these cases. Just tons of, like, just insane malfeasance on the part of the crew. Like, I'm surprised the cruise people haven't, like, tried to take him out. He's testified before Congress to get legislation passed. It's really crazy. Yeah, the way he describes it is, like, a cruise ship has, like, thousands and thousands of people on it. Like, sometimes close to 10,000, if not that many. And, like, no police. There's no police force. It's like a little mini city out in the ocean with no police force and all the workers are essentially like transients. They're like people who don't have to pass any background check. And I don't want to sound xenophobic, but they come from all over the world, let's say. So of varying moral compasses. So, and they're living the life on the sea. So it's like you're already, who the fuck knows what that does to your moral compass if you've spent 20 years living on cruise ships. It's like, God, you're like a fucking alien. You're not even like part of civilization. So yeah, it's a wild world. I would highly recommend checking that out.
That's actually a really good recommendation. I'm gonna put that in the topic box.
nice. All right. Well, like I said, the website is jennyashford.com. I told you the books, The Faceless Villain Trilogy, plus there's a whole bunch. We didn't even get into your stuff on poltergeist. That's why I said we got to get you back on the show in the future to talk about poltergeists and paranormalia and stuff like that. But there's only so much time in the evening. So we covered the true crime stuff tonight. And 13 o'clock is the podcast. And once again, Jenny will be speaking right after me 2 weeks from tonight at the Strange Realities Conference, which you can watch from the comfort of your own home at strangerealitiesconference.com. I think that covers it all. Well, Jenny, I can't thank you enough. This was an absolute blast. I should be delving more into true crime because I really do enjoy talking about it so much, and I appreciate you letting me kind of rant a little bit about some of these stuff, or pluck some of these random cases that have always kind of vexed me, and be like, what do you think of what do you think of this case? So this is kind of the equivalent. A lot of people say the show sometimes feels like a couple of friends sitting at the bar having a beer. This is pretty close to the ideal style that we do here on Banal of America. So I really did appreciate it, and hopefully we'll be talking again in the future. And I almost said I'll see you at the I will see you at the Strange Realities Conference, but I'll see you on the
on the
computer.
Monitor, on the computer.
Yeah, we won't be raising hell in Nashville this year. Maybe next year. All right. Well, good luck with your presentation. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Good luck with the presentation. We'll be talking soon, and have fun out there.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good night.
Thanks. Good night.
All right, folks. That was Jenny Ashford. That was an awesome edition of Banal of America. That was a lot of fun. We covered a lot of stuff I don't think we've ever done on BOA. I've always wanted to do like a whole Zodiac episode. I got to track down that Zodiac conspiracy theorist, even though I don't necessarily believe what he says or subscribe to his theory. It would be interesting to hear what he has to say. But yeah, I maybe I'll be getting more into true crime as time goes on. And that's a good segue to what's coming up next for Banal of America. As I said, this is the penultimate Summer of Strangeness session. So we got one episode left. It was funny. I was going to have to put out a call to the Banal of America listeners to try and psychically make this happen. But as luck would have it, our guest contacted me a couple of days ago, and we locked him in. So it was with great pleasure that I inform you all that we will be wrapping up the Summer of Strangeness with the man, the myth, the legend, William Zabel. And if you're not a longtime Banal of America listener, you probably don't know William Zabel, but he's one of the more colorful characters we've ever had on Banal of America. He started out as a Columbine conspiracy theorist originally when we had him on the show. Then he vanished for like 3 or 4 years, and everybody wanted him back on the show, but we couldn't find him. He disappeared. Then he resurfaced, and we brought him back. And we got into all kinds of crazier conspiracy theories and wild stuff about his life as an actor. He says he was in the movie Ford Fairlane. We still haven't been able to confirm that. And also a film called Kramer's Ketchup, which nobody can seem to find. So suffice it to say, he's one of the more popular but all American guests because we don't know what he's going to say next. And excitingly, if that's even a word, since the last time we talked to him, I'm under the impression he left America, moved to Europe. I think he bounced from Germany to Portugal. And then, because of the pandemic, he left Portugal and came back here, which he's not very happy about at all. So if you like fired up, angry, ornery William Zabel, you're in for a treat next week. So it's been a long time coming. I miss William Zabel. I remember when we talked to him last, he was saying he was going to leave for Germany, and I'm like, what the fuck, are you crazy, dude? What are you doing? Why are you leaving for Germany? And apparently he did. So we're going to find out about his adventure. We're going to find out what became of the car wash he owned. My Car Wash was the name of it. We're going to get into all that. We're going to find out that. We're going to find out what he thinks of QAnon. What does William Zabel think of QAnon? I've got to know this. I know he doesn't like Donald Trump. He certainly doesn't like the Democrats. He doesn't seem to like anybody. He's concerned about the deep state. I follow him on Facebook. But we're going to get all his thoughts on all this stuff because there's so much going on right now that is strange and unusual in sort of the conspiracy sphere. And if anybody has a unique opinion on it, I'm sure it's William Zabel. So I teased it on social media that longtime Banal of America listeners should be thrilled about this, should be excited, because he's one of the more popular guests we've ever had on BOA. And a return from William Zabel is long overdue. So that's going to be next week on the program. What is that? September 18th, 2020. William Zabel, the conclusion of the Banal of America Summer of Strangeness. And I guess I'll give you information on what's going to happen after that on next week's episode. But pretty much this is not the end of our run here, you know, probably in 2020 for sure. So there'll be more episodes coming down the line, but next week will be sort of a stopping point for a little while, so I can take a little break, and then we'll resume stuff. I have sort of a plan. Maybe I'll get into that next week. But be that as it may, you got one more show. It's coming up next week. It's William Zabel, September 18th, 9 p.m. Eastern, same Banal time, same Banal channel. Tune in. I think it's going to be awesome. Once again, big thanks to Jenny Ashford for coming on the show. Loved the conversation. I could talk true crime for hours, man. I really could. It's one of the more – it's just something about it. I don't know. It's that – like I said, it's that true part of it. It's like a – these are real horror stories, and they are truly horrific. Thanks to Jim Vujovic and Zach Copley and Sarah Streetfield for joining us in the chat tonight. A couple of people popped in but didn't say anything, so we won't give them any credit for for getting in the chat. Big thanks, of course, to the folks who listened live, and of course to the folks who are listening now here on the MP3. And as such, and with all that said, until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off. Oh,